I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
It's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that is Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum.
You falsely accused me of being involved in a racial incident.
He said you were
involved.
He said you were racist.
He said you
you're going to be dealt with.
He said he works for you.
It's going to come to light who you really are. It's going to come to light who you really are.
Hey, just answer one question. Yes or no?
What about the fake person?
Yes or no?
And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist, you're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs, fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Tuesday, September 14th, 2021 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride. So I mentioned yesterday I had a conversation with a dear friend of mine over the weekend. And he always has some provocative insight. And it's always accidental. It's not really intentional. But that know who your God is statement is one of those things. And one of the other profound things that he said was, you know, these bleeding heart folks, their kindness will kill a billion people. You know, you want to say that to some of these people, your kindness will kill a billion people. And they're godless folks, well-intentioned, well-meaning enough, but godless. And that kind of thing is everywhere. We'll play a video here in a minute that speaks to this. Maybe you've seen it, probably not. Academy of Ideas YouTube video titled How to Escape from a Sick Society. And we've been kind of talking about this in recent days, weeks, months, years, I suppose. And it should be becoming increasingly obvious to a number of folks, painfully so, that America has been, you know, as I was sort of talking about yesterday, alchemically altered and is being alchemically altered into a very sick society. So I'm reminded of history. I have a number of these kinds of books. Here's one, The Nazi Seizure of Power, The Experience of a Single German Town, 1922 to 1945 by William Sheridan Allen. This is the revised edition, published in 1984, I believe, originally published in 1965. And Appendix A is a descriptive list of individuals interviewed for this book. And it's an interesting book. Fascinating look at history. And it reminds me of all of the other books like it. You know, for example, They Thought They Were Free, Milton Mayer, published back in 1955. The Germans, 1933 to 45, similar sort of experience, you know, chronologing what happened and sort of how it happened. And there's this central theme that seems to emerge. You know, I keep using the term at glacial speed. It's that kind of thing, you know. From page 166 of Milton Mayer's They Thought They Were Free, but then it was too late. This is a sentiment echoed. You know, Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago is one of the books that, you know, really sort of hammers this point home. What no one seemed to notice, said a colleague of mine, a philologist, was the ever-widening gap after 1933 between the government and the people. Just think how very wide this gap was to begin with here in Germany. And it became always wider. You know, it doesn't make people close to their government to be told that this is a people's government, a true democracy, or to be enrolled in civilian defense, or even to vote. All this has little, really nothing, to do with knowing one is governing. What happened here was a gradual habituation of the people, little by little, to being governed by surprise, to receiving decisions deliberated in secret, to believing that the situation was so complicated that the government had to act on information which the people could not understand. Does that sound like COVID, America? Or so dangerous that even if the people could not understand it, it could not be released because of national security, and their sense of identification with Hitler, their trust in him, made it easier to widen this gap and reassured those who would otherwise have worried about it. Doesn't that sound like possibly what I described yesterday? You know, this kind of paving the way for the next guy. Maybe it'll be a return to that last guy, and you know, the people's sense of identification and their trust in him, identification with and trust in. This separation of government from the people, this widening of the gap, took place so gradually and so insensibly, each step disguised, perhaps not even intentionally, as a temporary emergency measure or associated with true patriotic allegiance or with real social purposes. And all the crises and reforms, real reforms too, so occupied the people that they did not see the slow motion underneath of the whole process of government growing remoter and remoter. So there's this deal in Idaho, similar in other states. Idaho activates crisis standards of care in North Idaho due to surge of COVID-19 patients requiring hospitalization. And, you know, the one provocative sentence, I think, you know, we have reached an unprecedented and unwanted point in the history of our state. We have taken so many steps to avoid getting here, but yet again, we need to ask more Idahoans to choose. See how that works? The devil needs you to choose. A vaccine so safe you need to be threatened to take it, and a virus so deadly you have to be tested to know if you have it. People are ending up in hospitals unrelated to COVID and dying because they get put on ventilators. I heard another story about that just yesterday and today. More Idahoans need to choose to receive the vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine. And this is a statement that's reiterated. We have taken so many steps, but yet again, we need to ask more Idahoans to choose to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. More Idahoans need to choose to receive the vaccine so we can minimize the spread of the disease and reduce the number of COVID-19 hospitalizations, many of which involve younger Idahoans and are preventable with safe and effective vaccines, Governor Brad Little said. Why do you have to say safe and effective vaccines? I mean, we know it's a rhetorical question. We need you to choose. And, you know, quit looking at, stop getting hung up on the facts. You know, like in many cases, the places where people are most highly vaccinated, there are the most, you know, problematic reactions. There are the most outbreaks and things like that. Stop looking at the facts. I mean, just get your safe and effective vaccine, for Pete's sake. I've not received a vaccine, I've not been tested, and so far, I don't know. If I had something, I didn't know about it. So somehow I've managed to survive. But this is the provocative sentence. When crisis standards of care are in effect, people who need medical care may experience care that is different from what they expect. I think that really, that one sentence says it all. And what is happening, I mean, I say that because I've heard some stories about people receiving care, especially these younger folks, as younger Idahoans, as Governor Brad Little referred to. And it's not what they expect. It becomes a terrifying experience, and these young people that are not in the hospital for anything remotely related to COVID are dying after they get put on ventilators. That's what I'm hearing from, you know, real stories from real people, not from the news. And so what is going on? And this, again, reminds me of the book, you know, Robin Cook's Contagion, among others. There are several books written like that. And, you know, what happens when someone stumbles upon a sinister plot to use these places that are controlled by Big Pharma, essentially, to euthanize millions of people, lots and lots of people? The most expensive element of their consumer base, their subscribers or whatever. Are you in network? I mean, there's no law that says we're supposed to, that we have to receive health care and free health care and that it's a right and all of this kind of nonsense. Anyway, a little bit more of Milton Mayer's They Thought They Were Free, from continuing from page 167. You will understand me when I say that my middle high German was my life. It was all I cared about. I was a scholar, a specialist. Then suddenly I was plunged into all the new activity as the university was drawn into the new situation, meetings, conferences, interviews, ceremonies, and above all, papers to be filled out, reports, bibliographies, lists, questionnaires. And on top of that were the demands in the community, the things in which one had to, was expected to participate that had not been there or had not been important before. You know, we've seen this stuff coming. I just found yesterday, I dug up a copy of, what's it called? True Ots Talk, I think it was 2008. Alma True Ott. Injecting Pandemic, I think it's called. And it was on the $1 DVD project, I think. So you know, but who remembers that? So he sort of went through a history of things that we've seen that built on this, and that was the moment when Idaho in particular was had just adopted the pandemic influenza response plan, was publishing all of that really awful propaganda about the so-called bird flu. And we went through that episode with the White House and White House press secretary saying it's not a thing, it's not a big deal. And yet still here we are with all of this fear-mongering. And you can see it when all of the states started adopting. You know, Whitney Webb has written some great stuff chronologing what's been happening too with this. And this is one of the big sort of gotchas, because the argument is, hey, you know what, as guys like Dersh say, you don't have a right to infect me with your body or whatever. So my body, my choice, except when you're infecting me. And so who's to say that you're not infecting people? Because we have this PCR test that we can run cycle rates up astronomically so that we'll get false positives. And Carrie Mullis said it shouldn't be used for this anyway. But hey, we still got a false positive on you. And so how do you know you're not infecting people? And therefore you must. So back to Milton Mayer's, they thought they were free. On top of that were the demands in the community, the things in which one had to, was expected to, you know, wear a mask, unsocial distance, antisocial distance, get vaccinated. It's safe. You know what? Get a booster, get two or three, get five or get 15. Maybe you'll be left alone. Maybe you won't. The things which one had to do, one had to, was expected to participate, that had not been there or had not been important before. But you could see the groundwork being laid if you were paying attention here in America. And on this network, you know, dear listener, that we have been shouting from the rooftops, sounding the alarm about that groundwork. I've talked about the meeting that I attended where in Kootenai County, Idaho, the experts, the county health officials, were basically sneering and laughing when I read verbatim from the Idaho Influenza Pandemic Response Plan. It says that one guy gets to declare an emergency, and if that happens, then this one person decides when the response phase begins and when it ends, and that can include, mass vaccinations, even though there wasn't an outbreak. That's what it says. And they laughed. Oh, that would never happen. Really? Because it seems like we're there now. Kind of like that video that's circulating, somebody's clipped together of the, you know, vaccines will never be mandated. Suddenly they're mandated with the, what's his name? You know, that escalated quickly at the end. Will Ferrell's character, Ron Burgundy. Anyway, you can see it coming. Even though it's happening at glacial speed, just look at the signs. So on top of that were the demands in the community, the things in which one had to, was expected to participate, like Governor Brad Little is saying in Idaho now, that had not been there or had not been important before. It was all rigmarole, of course. But it consumed all one's energies, coming on top of the work one really wanted to do. You can see how easy it was then not to think about fundamental things. One had no time. You feel like that these days? I know I do. Those, I said, are the words of my friend the baker, one who had no time to think. There was so much going on. And that sounds like what Jefferson said. Didn't he say something about that? And we'll be right back.
And would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
So, Thomas Jefferson, letter to Samuel Kercheval, he said, we must make our election between economy and liberty, or profusion and servitude. And of course, we've been seduced and beguiled into profusion and servitude, but ultimately, it is our own choice. That was when he said a departure from principle in one instance becomes a precedent for a second, that second for a third, and so on, till the bulk of society is reduced to be mere automatons of misery and have sensibilities, no sensibilities left but for sinning and suffering. And in all of that, he said basically if we choose wrongly, then it will be a miserable existence. We'll have no time to think, no means of calling the mismanagers to account, but be glad to obtain subsistence by hiring ourselves to rivet their chains on the necks of our fellow sufferers, etc., etc. And then you see the continuation of the feudalist sort of theme, which we're seeing in America. That's something that I intend to get back to at some point. And there are a number of particular examples. So injecting pandemic, that was the film. Dollar DVD Project, $1DVDproject.com. I wonder if it's, where is that? Yeah, it's still there. So you can go to the $1 DVD Project and see that if you're not familiar. And, you know, all kinds of other fun stuff, right? So, back to Milton Maris, they thought they were free. Your friend the baker was right, said my colleague. The dictatorship and the whole process of its coming into being was above all diverting. It provided an excuse not to think for people who did not want to think anyway. I do not speak of your little men, your baker, and so on. I speak of my colleagues and myself, learned men, mind you. And again, this reminds me of the conversation with the friend. You know, it's the types that Chamath Palihapitiya warned at the Stanford School of Business, who are the most susceptible and vulnerable. They are the most trusting of their clique, you know, their education, their profession, their peers, and so on. And so it's the bandwagon effect fallacy in full effect. I mean, come on, Chris, could a million such and such be wrong? Absolutely. Could we all be misled? Look, we're the smart ones. You're a lower IQ, not quite as intelligent, so just, you know, pipe down. No, actually, folks like you have admitted throughout history, including in Milton Maris, They Thought They Were Free, that you guys were the ones who were the most beguiled. I speak of my colleagues and myself, learned men, mind you. Most of us did not want to think about fundamental things and never had. There was no need to. Nazism gave us some dreadful fundamental things to think about. We were decent people and kept us so busy with continuous changes and crises, quote unquote, and so fascinated, yes, fascinated by the machinations of the national enemies. You know, and now we have invisible enemies in America. Without and within, that we had no time to think about these dreadful things that were growing little by little all around us. Unconsciously, I suppose, we were grateful. Who wants to think? Especially in times like these. And again, that gets back to concepts that bad guys know, like the Alice in Wonderland applied power of confusion technique, which induces this kind of mindset, makes people more malleable, more easily subjugated. That's not supposed to be in our DNA here in America, to do that to one another and to behave like that. It's supposed to be antithetical to our DNA and our constitution, literally and figuratively. It's un-American. It's anti-American. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime fighting, political science analyzing brawn. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Welcome back. All right. One final excerpt and then to the video. So from Milton Mayer's They Thought They Were Free, continuing page 169. You see, my colleague went on. And by the way, remember that the crimes are always made legal before, you know, the crimes of state are always legalized, you know, air quotes, beforehand. That's what all of the state pandemic influenza response plans amount to. And again, Truott, you know, in that one talk, injecting pandemic, went through instances of essentially just that. And it has continued. So, you know, that's what Whitney Webb has chronicled essentially in, you know, from the work of Robert Kadlec and friends, from FBI Thrax on forward, menacing the public with an endless series of hobgoblins, as H.L. Mencken might put it. What does that do? Here's what it does. From Milton Mayer's, they thought they were free. You see, my colleague went on, one doesn't see exactly where or how to move. Believe me, this is true. Each act, each occasion is worse than the last, but only a little worse. You wait for the next and the next. You wait for one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. You don't want to act or even talk alone. You don't want to go out of your way to make trouble. Why not? Well, you are not in the habit of doing it. And it's not just fear of standing alone, that restrains you. It is also genuine uncertainty. Uncertainty is a very important factor, and instead of decreasing as time goes on, it grows. Outside in the streets, in the general community, everyone, air quotes, everyone is happy. One hears no protest, and certainly sees none. You know, in France or Italy, there would be slogans against the government painted on walls and fences. In Germany, outside the great cities, perhaps there is not even this. In the university community, in your own community, you speak privately to your colleagues, some of whom certainly feel as you do, but what do they say? They say, it's not so bad, or you're seeing things, or you're an alarmist. Does any of this ring a bell, America? And you are an alarmist. You are saying that this must lead to this, and you can't prove it. These are the beginnings, yes, but how do you know for sure when you don't know the end? And how do you know or even surmise the end? On the one hand, your enemies, the law, the regime, the party, intimidate you. On the other, your colleagues poo-poo you as a pessimistic or even neurotic. You're left with your close friends, who are naturally people who have always thought as you have, but your friends are fewer now. Some have drifted off somewhere or submerged themselves in their work. You no longer see as many as you did at meetings and gatherings. Informal groups become smaller. Attendance drops off in little organizations, and the organizations themselves wither. Now in small gatherings of your oldest friends, you feel that you're talking to yourselves, that you are isolated from the reality of things. This weakens your confidence still further and serves as a further deterrent to what? It is clearer all the time that if you're going to do anything, you must make an occasion to do it. And then you're obviously a troublemaker. So you wait. And you wait. But the one great shocking occasion, when tens or hundreds or thousands will join you, never comes. That's the difficulty. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, thousands, yes, millions, would have been sufficiently shocked if, let us say, the gassing of the Jews in 43 had come immediately after the German firm stickers on the windows of non-Jewish shops in 33. But of course, this isn't the way it happens. In the beginning come all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each one of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. Step C is not so much worse than B. Step B. And if you did not make a stand at step B, why should you at step C? And so on to step D. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you. The burden of self-deception has grown too heavy. And some minor incident, in my case, my little boy, hardly more than a baby, saying, Jewish swine, collapses in all at once. And you see that everything has changed, and changed completely under your nose. The world you live in, your nation, your people, is not the world you were born in, at all. The forms are all there, all untouched, all reassuring. The houses, the shops, the jobs, the mealtimes, the visits, the concerts, the cinema, the holidays. But the spirit, which you never noticed because you made the lifelong mistake of identifying it with the forms, is changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear. And the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed. Now you live in a system which rules without responsibility even to God. The system itself could not have intended this in the beginning, but in order to sustain itself, it was compelled to go all the way. And on that note, the video titled How to Escape from a Sick Society. Go ahead, please.
Alexander Solzhenitsyn, reflecting on the Soviet Union's descent into totalitarian rule in the mid-20th century, and all the things that could have been done to prevent it, wrote the following. If we didn't love freedom enough, and even more, we had no awareness of the real situation, we hurried to submit. We submitted with pleasure. We purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterward. The 20th century clearly shows that totalitarianism is not a solution to any problem, but a social ill of the most horrific kind. More innocent men, women, and children were killed by the totalitarian regimes of the 20th century than by natural disasters, pandemics, or even the two world wars. If, therefore, we are unfortunate enough to be living in a world flirting with the sickness of totalitarianism, what can we do to escape? In this video, relying on the insights of those who studied and lived under totalitarian rule, we are going to explore what is called the forward escape from the control of the cruel and twisted minds of would-be totalitarians. To understand what this form of escape entails, we will contrast it with two other ways to escape from the hardships of living through an attempted totalitarian takeover: the backward escape and the physical escape. The backward escape entails dulling one's awareness of the reality and precariousness of one's situation through the use of drugs and alcohol, or by zoning out in front of screens for hours on end. The backward escape can provide short-term relief to feelings of anxiety, depression, and boredom, but the more one relies on such activities, the more one's mental health deteriorates. Furthermore, the backward escape does nothing to prevent the rise of totalitarianism, as it promotes docility, passivity, and apathy, all traits that make people more manipulable and controllable, or as Dr. Joost Mierlo explained in his book on totalitarianism. The cult of passivity and so-called relaxation is one of the most dangerous developments of our times. Essentially, it represents a camouflage pattern, the double wish not to see the dangers and challenges of life and not to be seen. Silent, lonely relaxation with alcohol, sweets, or the television screen may soothe the mind into a passivity that may gradually make it vulnerable to the seductive ideology of some feared enemy. Denying the danger of totalitarianism through passivity may gradually surrender to its blandishments those who were initially afraid of it. An alternative to the backward escape is the physical escape, which is to relocate to a place that offers more freedom. This form of escape has many benefits, for given that we have one chance at life, why not live somewhere absent the stifling control of corrupt and power-hungry politicians and bureaucrats? But there are problems with this form of escape. Firstly, for many people, it is not practical to pack up and move to a new land. Furthermore, if we live at a time when the rise of tyranny is a global phenomenon, the practicality of the physical escape diminishes further, as the sought-after pockets of freedom are few and far between. What is more, if totalitarianism is permitted to proliferate, the places that are free now may not remain so for long. Running away, like escaping backward, is not the ideal solution to the rise of totalitarianism. Instead, the solution is to escape forward into a new and better reality. What does the forward escape entail? To answer this question, we need to dispel with the notion that totalitarianism can be defeated through compliance. Many people cede to the commands of would-be totalitarians because they believe that so doing is the quickest means to return to some semblance of normality. But this is a cowardly and ignorant way to act. For compliance only emboldens totalitarian regimes, a point emphasized by the political philosopher Hannah Arendt in her book The Origins of Totalitarianism. The most characteristic aspect of totalitarian terror is that it is let loose when all organized opposition has died down, and the totalitarian ruler knows that he no longer need be afraid. Stalin started his gigantic purges not in 1928 when he conceded, "We have internal enemies," but in 1934 when all former opponents had confessed their errors, and Stalin himself at the 17th Party Congress declared, "There is nothing more to prove and, it seems, no one to fight." Compliance is the food that feeds totalitarians. Compliance is not, and never will be, the path back to some form of normality. Rather, non-compliance and civil disobedience are essential to counter the rise of totalitarian rule. But in addition to resistance, a forward escape into a reality absent the sickness of totalitarian rule requires the construction of a parallel society. A parallel society serves two main purposes. It offers pockets of freedom to those rejected by the totalitarian system or who refuse to participate in it, and it forms the foundation for a new society that can grow out of the ashes of the destruction wrought by the totalitarians. Or as Václav Havel, a dissident under the communist rule of Czechoslovakia, explains in his book, The Power of the Powerless. When those who have decided to live within the truth have been denied any direct influence on the existing social structures, not to mention the opportunity to participate in them, and when these people begin to create what I have called the independent life of society, this independent life begins, of itself, to become structured in a certain way. These parallel structures do not grow out of a theoretical vision of systemic change. There are no political sects involved, but from the aims of life and the authentic needs of real people. There are innumerable ways to contribute to the construction of a parallel society. One can build technologies that promote freedom, or agoristic economic institutions that further voluntary exchange. One can run a business that resists implementing unjust laws or mandates, or one can create media or educational institutions that counter the lies and propaganda of the state. Or one can create music, literature, or artwork that counters the staleness of totalitarian culture. The parallel society is a decentralized and voluntary alternative to the centralized and coercive control of the totalitarian society, and as Havel explains, one of the most important tasks the dissident movements have set themselves is to support and develop parallel social structures. What else are those initial attempts at social self-organization than the efforts of a certain part of society to rid itself of the self-sustaining aspects of totalitarianism and, thus, to extricate itself radically from its involvement in the totalitarian system? And as he explains further, it would be quite wrong to understand the parallel structures and the parallel society as a retreat into a ghetto and as an act of isolation, addressing itself only to the welfare of those who had decided on such a course. The ultimate phase of this process is the situation in which the official structures simply begin withering away and dying off, to be replaced by new structures that have evolved from below and are put together in a fundamentally different way. The construction of a parallel society, however, is not merely a long-term solution to totalitarian destruction, but also serves to counter the rise of totalitarian rule. For the act of building parallel social structures reveals that not everyone will just roll over and submit to total state control. And as was noted by Hannah Arendt, this helps keep the would-be totalitarians in check. This process also counters the social atomization that comes with totalitarian rule by promoting voluntary communal bonds between those who cherish freedom. And as an added benefit for those who partake in this process, it can serve as a healthy vehicle to escape the day-to-day feelings of anxiety, boredom, and depression that accompany living in a world teetering with a descent into totalitarianism. For if we pick a goal to help in the construction of the parallel society and work towards it in a disciplined and focused manner, we give our life more meaning, and we open up the possibility of attaining the peak experiential states of flow and rush. Flow is an optimal state of consciousness, in which attention is so narrowly focused on an activity that a sense of time fades, along with the troubles and concerns of day-to-day life. Rush, on the other hand, is the word Nietzsche used for a peak cognitive state similar to flow. "What is essential in Rush," wrote Nietzsche, is the feeling of increased strength and fullness. Rausch is an emergent byproduct of focused attempts to effectuate real-world change. And when in Rausch, as in flow, we perform at our best. Or as John Richardson explains in Nietzsche's New Darwinism, in Rausch, the organism feels its capacities at a peak and takes pleasure in this heightened potency. These capacities are drives to work on the world, and in Rausch one feels oneself overfull with them, bursting to change things to fit oneself. Both flow and Rausch are healthy ways to escape from the day-to-day miseries of living in a sick and corrupted society. Unlike the numbing experiential zones of the backward escape which weaken us in body and mind, flow and Rausch strengthen us and increase our feelings of power. The more people who experience flow and Rausch, the harder it is for those in power to herd a populace into the chains of totalitarian servitude. And as Alexander Solzhenitsyn warned, no weapons, no matter how powerful, can help the West until it overcomes its loss of willpower. To attempt the forward escape by contributing to the creation of a parallel society and in the process attaining the states of flow and Rausch comes with risks, and success is not guaranteed, but it is a far better option than merely sitting passively by just hoping things will get better. Hope, in reality, claimed Nietzsche, is the worst of all evils because it prolongs the torments of man. In place of mere hope, courageous action from as many people as possible is needed to prevent the rise of totalitarian rule. And the sooner people act in defiance of would-be totalitarians, the greater the chance of success. For the mistake that was made over and over again in the totalitarian countries of the 20th century was that people didn't act soon enough. Milton Mayer, in his book They Thought They Were Free, interviews an individual who lived through Hitler's rule. And his words should serve as a warning for those who live in a world at risk of being engulfed by the life-destroying machinery of totalitarian rule. You wait for one great shocking occasion, thinking that others, when such a shock comes, will join with you in resisting somehow. But the one great shocking occasion, when tens or hundreds of thousands will join with you, never comes. If the last and worst act of the whole regime had come immediately after the first and smallest, thousands, yes, millions, would have been sufficiently shocked. But of course, this isn't the way it happens. In between comes all the hundreds of little steps, some of them imperceptible, each of them preparing you not to be shocked by the next. And one day, too late, your principles, if you were ever sensible of them, all rush in upon you, and you see that everything, everything has changed. Now you live in a world of hate and fear, and the people who hate and fear do not even know it themselves. When everyone is transformed, no one is transformed.
There you go. And as always, it seems, it's kind of the blind leading the blind. It's interesting how the problem is well articulated. The solution is kind of out of the frying pan into the fire. It reminds me of Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed, among other things, and how, guys like Bertrand Russell and the Fabian contingent, the people who create the problems, are always so masterful at articulating them. And you think, wow, he understands the problem so well. I'll bet whatever he advocates as a solution is probably the thing. It has to be the thing. And then you hear it and you kind of go, no, that seems to fall a little flat. Sounds a little hollow. Doesn't quite strike a resonant chord. And there are a lot of things that I find problematic about it. So that's always interesting. And I feel like a stuck record, but I always come back to this. If you want to talk about freedom, then you go to the source of freedom. And one of the best, most provocative passages in the Bible about this is John chapter 8. There's this conversation developing, speaking of things from above and below, you know, the esoteric nonsense, as above, so below. This conversation is developing, and, you know, in that regard, Jesus, so verse 22 reads, from verse 22, so the Jews were saying, surely he will not kill himself, will he, since he says, where I am going, you cannot come. And he was saying to them, you are from below, I am from above, you are of this world, I am not of this world. Therefore I said to you that you will die in your sins, for unless you believe that I am he, you will die in your sins. So they were saying to him, who are you? Jesus said to them, what have I been saying to you from the beginning? I have many things to speak and to judge concerning you, but he who sent me is true, and the things which I heard from him, these I speak to the world. And I've been thinking about lately this idea from John 21:25 that Jesus did many things, and I suppose if they were all written down, the world could not contain the books they would fill. Which is a fascinating idea when you consider, I mean, there's that concept of the, you know, the Bible, the Old Testament is the New Testament concealed, New Testament is the Old Testament revealed, but specifically the red letters are really contained primarily in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So it's not just, I mean, it is the whole Bible. He is the way, the truth, the life. He is the Word. In the beginning was the Word was with God, the Word was God. But, you know, the direct sort of literal historical account of his time on earth is predominantly in the Gospels, and that's a small portion of the whole Bible. So, I mean, in context, that's an interesting thought. Anyway, this conversation in John 8 continues, and then it really touches a nerve in verses 31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed in him, actually, verse 30 says, as he spoke these things, many came to believe in him. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed in him, if you continue in my word, four-part conditional statement, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. The truth will make you free. But you can't, again, you can't pick up the stick without, you can't pick up the one end, you can't pick up the truth will make you free without the conditional statement. If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. That's freedom. And the Bible says, whoever the Son sets free is free indeed. That's where freedom is. Not in some, you know, Marxist, Nietzschean, will to power nonsense. That's not the answer. I just got to throw that out there. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.